Welcome back to the Mining Pod. Today on the show, we're joined by Louis Guthman, ecosystem developer at Starkware. Starkware is building a zero-knowledge rollup for multiple chains, including Bitcoin, that promises to dramatically change how Bitcoin can scale without sacrificing security or Bitcoin simplicity. In this first episode, we talk about how zero-knowledge rollups are different from Lightning, how Starks can increase fees on Bitcoin, and why Starkware is going through all the effort. Louis, welcome to the Mining Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for hosting.
Really excited for this conversation, and I'm just thrilled that we got to line you guys up because Starkware is doing a lot of interesting things, not only in the Ethereum space, but you guys are moving into the Bitcoin space. Well, you guys are Bitcoiners, and I'd say just say like cryptographers in general. So maybe we can get like a little perspective on yourself, what you do at Starkware, and then what Starkware itself does, and then we'll move into the conversation about what Starkware is building for Bitcoin right now.
Okay, awesome. So my name is Louis Guthman. I'm going to trigger a couple of people here, but I've been in crypto for 6 years and I've been at Starkware for over 3 years. I'm the ecosystem lead. My role is to foster the ecosystem of developer and builders developing using Starkware tech, and we're going to get a tiny bit more about what Starkware do in a few seconds. And to basically go places and explain to what the technology that Starkware building called Zero Knowledge Proof can help in crypto at large, mostly on Ethereum right now and potentially on Bitcoin. And so about Starkware itself, so Starkware is a company focusing on cryptography. A specific type of cryptography called zero-knowledge proofs. Zero-knowledge proofs are a relatively old invention in computer science. They date back to roughly the 80s, but they became practical and useful roughly in the last 7 years. And the cool thing about zero-knowledge proof, the main usage that we're seeing with it is privacy. That's what Zcash is doing. And actually what Monero is doing also now. In the context of scaling, meaning how do you, by scaling, I'm going to define it this way, can you do more transaction on the same hardware? And so, for instance, how can Ethereum be running more transaction on the same hardware, and how can Bitcoin run more transaction on the same hardware? And more transaction can be two things, just more transaction itself or do more things that are would not be practical with the lack of scalability. And so Starkware is focusing on the second type, which is the scalability aspect. And those zero-knowledge proof are in this context also called validity proof, meaning they are a kind of a compression algorithm that enables you to compress computation in such a way that it's extremely fast to verify. This use case of fast verification is something fundamental to blockchains at large. Because as you may know, the reason why Ethereum, Bitcoin has scaling issues is because we are limited by the cheapest machine running on the network. And so, when people compare the TPS of Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana, they are literally comparing an orange to an apple to a Ferrari. We're not talking about the same thing, right? Because the target machine of Bitcoin is a Raspberry Pi, which is roughly the cheapest computer you can find. Like, I should be able to run Bitcoin practically on the Raspberry Pi. Ethereum is saying, that's a bit harsh. Let's say a high-end laptop. So for instance, I managed to sync ETH from scratch on my 2021 MacBook Pro. And Solana is saying, so roughly a $2,500 machine. And Solana is saying, maybe $2,000 machine is a bit extreme, companies are spending 100 times the amount every month for their practices, for the system. So why can't we have a $2,000 machine per month? And so we're not talking about the same thing. And so the beauty of zero-knowledge proof or validity proof, which I'm going to use afterwards, is that they are enabling you to break this weakest point, to make it in such a way that the miners can have very, very strong machines. Miners, validate, or miners or or block proposers to take a staking aspect, and basically pre-process the work for the rest of the network and their Raspberry Pi and their phone to verify what they did. And so Starkware is a leading company in this field of validity proof. We have been running for almost 4 or 5 years now. The company was founded by three cryptographers and Uri, who's the CEO, respectively, Eli Ben Sasson, Mikhail Rabiev, Uri Coloni, and Alessandro Chiesa. And since then, we have been working with various companies in the space, most notably DYDX, Sorare, Immutable, which are respectively different, doing like non-custodial perpetual trading, Web3 fantasy football, and general purpose NFT L2, which is, and all of them are billion-dollar companies. And for the last year now, we have been focusing on building StarkNet, which is this layer two right now on top of ETH, but this, for the all purposes, they could be also on top of Ethereum or Bitcoin. And to create this, to enable this L2 to work, and we developed this new tech called Cairo. And Cairo is this new programming language that makes it efficient to write code that can compile, that can run, can be proven. And so the whole idea of an L2 and StarkNet being a ZK rollup as an L2 is that we can make smart contracts that are basically verifiable by the base layer, Ethereum, or maybe in the future Bitcoin, in a compressed way, in a way that the main layer do not actually see what's going on the L2. And so this is actually the main difference with Bitcoin, without the sidechains, like, you know, like something like Liquid or something like RSK, is that when you go on an L2, your security relies 100% on the L1. And so what we have been doing right now about Bitcoin, that what we just described do not work today on Bitcoin. But Bitcoin has a very nice nice things to it, which is the protocol is extremely simple. And so one project we have been seeing gathering a bit of steam, you know, built by third parties, not by Starkware, built by third parties, is actually what we call Kepri or Zero Sync. And it's basically a way to turn Bitcoin into a succinct chain, a MINA type of chain, a recursive chain, in such a way that Bitcoin, without hard fork, without any change of protocol, can be verifiable on your phone. You could run a full node of Bitcoin on your phone. And so this is what I guess triggered the context of this podcast, because this idea of being able to run full node on your phone is as old as age in the context of Bitcoin, and it's finally getting practical without any sort of fork or change in the system, which obviously will not be practical, would not be realistic in the context of Bitcoin.
Let's go down that in a second, but I want to go back to what you said earlier about transactions per second, compression, and different parts of Bitcoin that would need to be changed perhaps in order to do what a lot of people want to do. What is the fundamental thing that Starkware and other people are seeing that needs that Bitcoin needs? Like, does Bitcoin need more transaction throughput? Does Bitcoin need smart contracts because of applications that they want to develop? Go ahead.
No, you don't want me to do me like you want me to trigger like a whole flame on myself.
The more
here.
Triggered people, the better. Oh, honestly, God.
No. So the truth is, it's I'm going to trigger a couple of people here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say a few things. Bitcoiners were always right about ETH, but they were self-righteous about it, and so which means the following thing.
That's going to trigger a lot of people.
No, I'm going to explain what you mean by this. Is that
yes?
It was true from the get-go that ETH couldn't scale. That was true from the get-go. That was true. But what I blame, you know, sort of like a significant chunk of the community, Bitcoin community, is that they don't think that things can improve, and they are very hard time admitting that. For instance, the ability that the economical opportunity that Ethereum developed enable company like Starkware to actually do their R&D and spend the energy and resources and getting the funding to make those technology that were the one that were needed in the first place true. And so it's what I'm like, Ethereum are external optimistic, Bitcoin are external pessimistic, and this is where the story goes, because it is realistic for today, for ETH today to scale. Now it is like Starkware is proving it, and others are proving it. Scaling as a big word, and as I said, like, it really depends what you mean. If a laptop is too expensive, so yes, Ethereum is not scaling. But the technologies that were developed for ETH now makes scaling on top of Bitcoin practical. This is where, so if you ask me what's needed on Bitcoin, I don't think that Bitcoin needs smart contract per se, but Bitcoin do need, for it to be successful, do need a way to enable double pegging, you know, like, having sort of like, you know, for instance, my ability to lock USDC from one hand and lock E on Bitcoin on the other, so I can actually do swaps at scale, not just atomic swaps, but like, you know, in an efficient way. And L2s, which were defined, you know, in the context of ETH, makes 100% sense in the context of Bitcoin. And so we kind of actually do need the smallest form of contracts for it to happen on Bitcoin. I mean, by contract, I mean, it's called specifically two things. It's called recursive covenants. And we need a bit more flexibility on the mathematical operation we can do on the base layer. So there will be a requirement for a soft fork at some point if we want to have L2s on top of Bitcoin. And the reason why L2 are very interesting in the context of Bitcoin is because the main issue Bitcoin face, without, you know, going around the butchers, is fees. There is not an healthy fee market on Bitcoin, even during the bull market. I mean, we can discuss the fee market on Ethereum right now, but there was the blocks are still filled on Ethereum. I mean, I'm pretty sure we can look it up precisely, but roughly there is an healthy fee market on ETH. There is no, the fee market on Bitcoin is a lot less logical, and it's come from a tension of the hold imperative, like you shouldn't spend your Bitcoin. At the same time, you need people to spend their Bitcoin to pay them for the fees. And so you need to have high paying members of the network to maintain security over time. And those high-paying members are people who are gathering a lot of economical value from the transaction. And L2s are a serious contender to provide this sort of efficient fee market, flourishing fee market.
Let's go back to that same idea and stick with it for a little bit, and then talk about implementation, which, of course, is a fun topic, as everyone loves governance decisions on any sort of chain, right? But for L2s, you enable a lot of off-chain computation and then you verify it on-chain. That's the most simple way I know how to describe it. And there's a few different models to do that. There's the optimistic roll-up perspective, ZK roll-ups. There's other stuff out there as well, of course. But the main point is to have that off-chain computation, sync it to the main chain, and then derive some sort of economic value from it. How does this compare to, say, Lightning, or how does this compare to any sort of other L2 design? L2 being very generalistic here, some people wouldn't call Lightning an L2, but very generalistic here. How would you compare what Starkware is doing with Bitcoin or with Ethereum to what Bitcoiners are mostly familiar with?
So I might trigger a few people here. I mean, listen, I respect Lightning. Lightning has the beautiful thing of being working today. I mean, it's a system that can work within the constraint of Bitcoin today. Now, and I think it's no one's, everyone is aware of this, and even Lightning people, right? That the Lightning has a few issues, which is the security of the model depend on the economy, basically works on economics. And there is a lot of like very hedge cases of, you know, with the imbalance wallet, like there is a bunch of things that are not very well rationalized. So when you want to work like in a blockchain system, you want to work in a system that is resistant to worst case scenario. You want to think about it as what happened in the worst case scenario. And then you build on top of that. And so the main advantage when you have with ZK rollup and optimistic rollup that it brings the question of especially ZK rollup. I won't get too much into the optimistic rollup because personal biases. I can delve into that. But the ZK rollup has the advantage of being able to bring that question of the trustlessness and the security away from the economic layer to the technical layer. And when you work on the technical layer, then you have it's a very well-defined system because you have a system. Here is my trust assumption or my security model. Here is my system. Am I filling the requirement? The problem that you have, and there is no externality because it's pure technique, it's pure math or pure whatever. It's a pure, well-defined system that do not have externalities. In an economic system, the main issue you have is it's very hard sometimes to think about the externalities. And I'm going to give you an example. People think about, actually, an example coming from Ethereum. People think of proof of stake as a system, you know, where it would be actually much more expensive than attacking, than, you know, buying the equivalent amount of ASIC to attack the system, right? But an externality that actually no one thought about until recently is you actually don't need to buy that ETH. You just need to create a centralized exchange attractive enough to let people deposit, and then you stake, and then all of a sudden you are a 25% majority holder of ETH on proof of stake. So when you bring some stuff from the pure technical layer to the economic layer, then you have edge cases that are hard to think about and in turn can literally turn your system upside down. MEV, for instance, until 2021 or 2021 was thought to not be existent. Now there is no single system that would not think about MEV. Because when you create economical opportunity, then this is where the attacks comes in. Where can I sneak in? Where can I take advantage of that undefined aspect of the system? And so, by the way, the same way people from the proof of work, the miners would tell you that. Would tell you, you know, the advantage is that the security model of proof of work is relatively well defined. It's expensive. You know, I need to pay upfront X amount of money to buy my thing. Then I can run it for this duration. The economical risk reward is unknown because you have the version of the price, but you still have a clear way to define the security model. And proof of stake has a lot of advantage, but do have some triggering details that could be edge cases. Same thing for the difference between Lightning and ZK rollups. ZK rollups bring everything to the technical layer, meaning I can check that my system fits it. And Lightning has a lot of how do I bring 7 billion people on it? What's the cost of capital of being a hub on the network? All those questions that are hard to answer and can create some instability in the way the system can be run in the long term. And so this is kind of the main difference. The difference, bring everything on tech level, makes it simpler.
That makes sense. I love that description. I want to go into the off-chain activity and how that comes back onto Bitcoin and generates fees, because that was a nice note you made earlier about how Bitcoin has a fee problem and solutions like Starkware and ZK rollups could bring more fees to Bitcoin, therefore more revenue for miners, increased security revenue, obviously all that good stuff. For off-chain computation, what are we talking about generally? Are we talking about DEXs? Are we talking about just any sort of general dApp? Could it be anything that we don't even know about yet?
That's a very good question. Today we are, so right now, I don't know if you know on Twitter, there is a rise of app chains. It's a new word coming out, app chain. So funny enough, app chain, if you think about it, has been around for a while. Luna was an app chain, I guess. It was more an ecosystem, I guess. But on ETH, we already have app chain, which are specifically Sorare, Immutable, DYTX, ZKSync V1, which are app, Polygon Hermes, which are app specific, one type of operation only chains. So the same way Aztec is a privacy app chain, it provides privacy and as an app chain. It's an L2 that has one single sequencer and that was one thing and one thing only. The type of operation you can get as an app chain is various. You can get basically anything you want. You can have DYDX, a perpetual non-custodial exchange, so you don't get hacked. And that's kind of like, you know, I mean, we've all been there for the various acts of, Bitfinex in 2018 who was hacked? Binance 2019, if I recall correctly, it was 2020. I don't remember when it was. I mean, we've been there. We've been around for hacks, right? So that's the first one. The second one is NFT marketplace or NFT universe. So right now, on Starkware, we have two main players on this. We have Sorare. And so if you're not familiar with Sorare, Sorare is the leading, probably the world, the only Web3 game that actually makes money. For real, not through token, not through shitcoin, it actually makes money. They are a $4 billion company, equity-based, raised with SoftBank. They are selling for a lot of money, card of a soccer player, and they just bought the NBA, and then just bought the baseball league in the US, and they have Serena Williams in their board. It's like very serious company, real science stuff. And they have their own environment, their own L2, where they do their operation and they pay security back to Ethereum. Same thing for Immutable, which is doing the same thing, but like more as a general purpose L2 for NFTs, where anyone can mint their NFT for cheap and settle them back to Ethereum. And so those apps are making money. They are self-contained, do not need composability, self-contained app that are making money and are willing to pay for security, for alignment with interests with the community, underlying community, and so they're doing so. So for Bitcoin, because each transaction is undifferentiable from the protocol perspective, there is kind of no reason, even if you do a $1 billion transaction, to pay $10 of fees. You can just pay the minimal fee to get included. I won't get into the reorg risk and all of that. Let's assume that doesn't happen, right? But what you want is actors that want to compete for inclusion, that want to raise the V-byte to a lot, to potentially replace to 50% or 100% or 200% of the block reward. And so this is kind of what we are seeing on the context of ETH, and what we hope we should hope to see at some point in the context of Bitcoin.
Gotcha. It's really interesting to see how these app chains could trickle down into mining revenue. That's something that, of course, miners are highly incentivized to think about. And once we get to the governance talk in a few moments here, it'd be interesting to get your thoughts about how those pressures are going to influence any implementation of something like this. But before we go into that, I want to talk about some of the costs for bringing about something like Starkware or any sort of generalized roll up onto Bitcoin. Of course, when Lightning came about, you had to have more or less a soft fork, which some people would say was a little bit more onerous than I thought. You had to increase the data size that nodes had to store from, it was 2 millibytes to 2.4 millibytes. And there's been a lot of conversations over the years about the impacts of SegWit and whether it was fair or not, given the benefits that Lightning would have in the future, right? It's highly experimental. For ZK rollups, what are some of the expected costs to Bitcoin in order to get this live? Is there more pressure on the nodes? Is all this data stored off-chain? Where do you store it once it's stored off-chain? What are some of the things that Bitcoiners would have to get used to in a ZK rollup-friendly Bitcoin world?
So that's a very fascinating question, because SegWit. So we briefly talked before about Capri and Zero Sync, which is this succinct Bitcoin full node. What I meant by it is that in a succinct Bitcoin full node, you can remove whole history, all witnesses. You only need to keep the UTXO set, add the current block, That's the ultimate vision. I mean, you can argue about the detail of implementation here, but roughly speaking, the ultimate vision of dynamic ZK Bitcoin without for network from the chain of the protocol is to say that everyone will just, you know, at the same time I'm mining a new block, I'm producing a proof of that block, which also proves the whole series of blocks in the past. And now I have a new proof and the current UTXO set. And that's it. That's all I need. I don't need anything else. And so in those cases, you can argue that, you know, you can even increase SegWit. You could even argue to that history doesn't matter anymore. That's actually a discussion I had with a couple of Bitcoiners, like what justifies the current block size on Bitcoin? And the answer is, it is what it is. It was basically no one wants to touch that kind of war. But the thing is that you can easily argue that if you have a ZK proving continuous ZK proving of Bitcoin, which as I said is not submit to fork, it's not requiring a fork per se to happen. You can easily argue that you don't have to wait for history anymore. You don't have to carry that history anymore. And so what now, this is just a comment about the whole debate about SegWit and so on. Like how can ZK actually solve that debate per se? But now let's go back to the main issue, which is the actual cost of proving a Stark operation on top of Bitcoin. So this is poorly analyzed yet in the following sense. There is only one work that Starkware financed with the Human Rights Foundation, by a guy called John Light, who is, I believe, used to work at RSK. I'm not sure exactly where he's at. He's working on the report for ZK rollups on top of Bitcoin. We might have more visibility on what can be done. I mean, I have a few direction ideas, but you know, it's not a report. Now, what I can say that today, a Stark proof weighs roughly 50 kilobytes, which is well within the realm of includable in the context of Bitcoin, like, you know, 1 gigabyte per block. So in the question is, and actually this goes back to the question about up return, which is, should things be sorted by fees? If I am a high payer of fees, is my transaction as valuable as an actual Bitcoin transaction? And some would tell you, no, that's not what Bitcoin. You are spamming the network. Spamming the network. I mean, that's an argument I never understood. That's my 2 cents. But you know, like, who are you to judge what I'm doing? Like, you know, and usually it's funny because the people who say that tend to be like very libertarian. Or something like very strict on those rules. Like, it never makes sense to me. But that's personal take.
And so, I know exactly who you're talking about there, by the way.
I'm not making any comment here. I do not know him. I do not know who I'm talking about here. It just can make sense to me. I mean, I guess we all read the same article. Is it spam? Maybe. Is it not spam? I don't know. From my perspective, someone paying fees is someone paying fees. So it's hard for me to judge that. So in terms of impact, we'll be talking roughly probably about 50 kilobyte, maybe 75, let's say 75 for the sake of discussion, maybe 100 kilobyte. That's another kilobyte for the sake of discussion. And this 100 kilobyte would include, could include 100 million, I mean, 100,000, a million transactions. But transaction, you know, I also don't like to talk transaction because a transaction that, you know, just do a transfer of token from A to B is not the same as a transaction that just, you know, arbitrage across five different decks. It's not exactly the same type of transaction, right? So, but let's say transaction. And so the weight of the network would be just computed in terms of like V byte is a compute of time, right? Like the fee on Bitcoin is of course length size, but it's an estimation of time, running time. And so like on any chain, by the way, like if you look at gas or that, it's a question of running time. And so we will need analysis to know how much time it takes to run that operation and then to check the practicality of it on Bitcoin in terms of proof size and verification, we are well within the realm of practical. To give you an order of magnitude, a proof verification takes 200 milliseconds. Two milliseconds, 3 milliseconds. A signature verification, I guess, on Bitcoin right now might be anywhere. I don't know exactly that numbers, but for a single signature, maybe 20 microseconds, 200 microseconds. I don't know exactly. So we are within the realm of well within acceptable. Like maybe 10x longer, but it's well beneath the threshold for it to be risky.
Okay, there's so many questions I could ask on top of that, but we only have so much time left. So I'm going to actually jump over to the implementation question, which of course is, this might be the most difficult question. Like the software is out there, like you have said, or at least is being worked on. A lot of the technical stuff is known or implemented. The economics are more or less understood, but the governance issue continues to be very difficult for every single chain. In terms of implementing some sort of Stark on top of Bitcoin, what would that look like? You mentioned earlier that at first you wouldn't need any sort of soft fork, but later maybe you do need that. How would this occur?
So my take on the topic is that, I mean, the pure external system is just kind of a proof of stake, a proof of work, like a proof of like a POC, proof of concept of what Starks can bring to Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That's just like, you know, just showcasing, guys, we did something cool. Just have a look, please. Yeah. Trust us. It's cool. Believe me. And so, you know, and then the hardships start. You say, okay, now let's talk beeps. And listen, the truth is I don't have the credibility to push Bit. No one in the ecosystem, in the Bitcoin ecosystem, no one knows me. And if I wanted to push it, it would be a tremendous amount of work. Tremendous as in building the trust, building, I'm not attacking Bitcoin, then showing that, you know, especially where I'm coming from, right? That I'm coming from the right reason. The good thing though is that we're starting to, Starkware historically has good relationship with a lot of Bitcoiners. To name a few, Andrew Poistra is a friend of Starkware. I mean, you know, just to name a few, because there is a picture of him with Starkware t-shirt. He's like a collector. Very few people got it. This one actually, he got it. no one else gets it. Very few people gets it. So Andrew is a guy who, you know, been interesting Bitcoin since 2019, at least 2018. I don't know. I met him in the office once. Ross Def is showing a lot of interest recently. I don't want to give name because I don't know if he did. I mean, I talked publicly with Ruben Thompson, with a bunch of others that I can't name because it wasn't public, so I don't want to drop name for the sake of dropping names. But so we're starting to get like a lot of interest from historical. Oh, Jory Murbin is a good friend of Starkware too. I would say, and so I mean, we are pushing. My role is to educate. My role is to say, guys, you know what? Don't believe me. Just have a look. Like you won't trust me anyway. It's fine. You don't know me. I'm coming from a place you often don't like. Don't trust me. Like, you know, don't trust very. Just verify. Just read the code. Read the sources. Read the papers. Read what has been built. What we're trying to do, see that what people are building is just fun. You know, it's good, it's useful, and see. I would love to see it coming. I mean, no, I love Bitcoin. I love Bitcoin. Like generally, you know, I got into crypto through Bitcoin, and the protocol is so nice and pretty and beautiful and, you know, lean, and so what in terms of governance, it would be obviously a lot of work. I have a bet, an ice cream bet with my boss that we might get a targeting inclusion within 6 years. This is like a very high risk bet.
Yeah, it is, honestly.
I know. He doesn't believe me, but it's something I really want to see because I just don't see a future where it doesn't happen, honestly. That's my main issue. What's the future if Bitcoin do not allow to do things? Because, I mean, I don't want to rely on Binance to trade my Bitcoin or or to even buy my Bitcoin to be more, you know, I want to DCA using, you know, my USDC and buy it directly through network in a non-custodial way. And that is something that Bitcoin didn't allow you to do today. And that's a shame.
Yeah, I love this last point you're bringing up. And I just want to add a little bit more fuel to the fire before we close out. What is the rationale behind all this? Like, what is the reason behind it? We have Ethereum, we have smart contracts in Ethereum, we have high throughput chains, and are not as secure as Bitcoin. They're not as simple and as beautiful as you said about Bitcoin. So there's a stark difference there, but what is the rationale for implementing a ZK rollup on top of Bitcoin?
I mean, Bitcoin is everyone's first love. And so, you know, that's basically the truth. Like, I mean, if Bitcoin is everyone's first love, Bitcoin is by far, by a mile, the simplest protocol around. And being simple, and by the way, I mean, the community is right about that. Being simple is key for future. Oh, by the way, something I didn't say, that also adding Stark on Bitcoin, you know, bringing Stark, it also solves a lot of problems that might appear in the future, like post-quantum security and so on. Just we focus on the fee model, but there are other things that actually Stark provide, but that's beside the point. The real reason why is care. I just care. I mean, we just care. I mean, care in the sense that Bitcoin is great. Just and it's I want to hold Bitcoin because Bitcoin is. Okay, let me give you an example. The OFAC shit show. I kind of hope that, like, look, actually, this is interesting. Because the reason, you know, Bitcoiners sometimes talk about MEV, they don't really, because MEV doesn't exist on Bitcoin, or like for any particular reason, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You can argue for edge cases, but let's assume it doesn't exist. And so, you know, forbidding a transaction to a specific person or a specific contract is unheard of in Bitcoin and won't be heard of because it doesn't make sense. But bringing it through the context of L2 just like make a base layer that doesn't have to care about OFAC neither, because the problem of OFAC-ness, I would say, would come to the L2, would not be a problem of the L1, and shouldn't be a problem of the L1. So maybe Bitcoin is just also the right place to be the best L1 possible, because simplicity prevented to sort of like have these black swan events of what all of a sudden the world we decide is good or bad. And we want this censorship resistance. And I don't want to live in a world that is governed by the US. I mean, I'm French and you know, I like my I've seen boobs in pictures and not feeling like it's going to beep every time someone say no. I mean, you know, like, you know, there's only about, I'm thinking of that, like, you know, I'm saying, like, you know, I don't want to get censored for displaying a picture where there is like a breast public breast outside or breastfeeding. You know, that's not something I imagine as a French guy. So I don't want a world where this happened at the base layer. You know what I'm saying? And so Bitcoin has a simplicity that provides guarantees, and we should leverage that.
I love that answer. I think that's a great place to leave the conversation. I'm definitely bullish on Starkware and ZK rollups. I'm excited that that's finally coming about, or at least the conversations are happening. Hope to have you and the Starkware team on the podcast again. But thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Have a great day.